Holmberg parked his father's Ford in the drive of former Prime Minister Thorbjørn Fälldin's house in Os, just outside Ramvik in Härnösand County. He got out of the car and looked around. At the age of 79, Fälldin could hardly still be an active farmer, and Holmberg wondered who did the sowing and harvesting. He knew he was being watched from the kitchen window. That was the custom in the village. He himself had grown up in Helledal, outside Ramvik, very close to Sandebron, which was one of the most beautiful places in the world. At least Holmberg thought so. He knocked on the front door. The former leader of the Centre Party looked old, but he seemed alert and vigorous.
"Hello, Thorbjørn. My name is Jerker Holmberg. We've met before, but it's been a few years. My father is Gustav Holmberg, a delegate for the Centre in the 70s and 80s. "Yes, I recognise you, Jerker. Hello. You're a policeman down in Stockholm now, aren't you? It must be 10 or 15 years since I last saw you." "I think it's probably longer than that. May I come in?"
Holmberg sat at the kitchen table while Fälldin poured them some coffee.
"I hope all's well with your father. But that's not why you came, is it?"
"No, Dad's doing fine. He's out repairing the roof of the cabin."
"How old is he now?"
"He turned 71 2 months ago."
"Is that so?"
Fälldin said, joining Holmberg at the kitchen table.
"So, what's this visit all about, then?"
Holmberg looked out the window and saw a magpie land next to his car and peck at the ground. Then he turned to Fälldin.
"I am sorry for coming to see you without warning, but I have a big problem. It's possible that when this conversation is over, I'll be fired from my job. I'm here on a work issue, but my boss, Criminal Inspector Jan Boblanski of the Violent Crimes Division in Stockholm, doesn't know I'm here."
"That sounds serious."
"Just say that I'd be on very thin ice if my superiors found out about this visit."
"I understand.
On the other hand, I'm afraid that if I don't do something, there's a risk that a woman's rights will be shockingly violated, and to make matters worse, it'll be the second time it's happened."
"You'd better tell me the whole story."
"It's about a man named Alexander Zalachenko. He was an agent for the Soviet's GRU and defected to Sweden on election day in 1976. He was given asylum and began to work for SEPO. I have reason to believe that you know his story."
Fälldin regarded Holmberg attentively.
"It's a long story," Holmberg said.
And he began to tell Fälldin about the preliminary investigation in which he had been involved for the past few months. Erika Berger finally rolled over onto her stomach and rested her head on her fists. She broke out in a big smile.
"Mikael, have you ever wondered if the two of us aren't completely nuts?"
"What do you mean?"
"It's true for me, at least. I'm smitten by an insatiable desire for you. I feel like a crazy teenager."
"Oh, yes?"
"And then I want to go home and go to bed with my husband."
Blomqvist laughed.
"I know a good therapist."
She poked him in the stomach.
"Mikael, it's starting to feel like this thing with SMP was one big fucking mistake."
"Bullshit. It's a huge opportunity for you. If anyone can inject life into that dying body, it's you."
"Maybe so. But that's just the problem. SMP feels like a cadaver. And then you dropped that bombshell about Borgsjö."
"You have to let things settle down."
"I know. But the thing with Borgsjö is going to be a real problem. I don't have the faintest idea how to handle it."
"Nor do I. But we'll think of something."
She was quiet for a moment.
"I miss you."
"I'll miss you too."
"How much would it take for you to come to SMP and be the news editor?"
"I wouldn't do it for anything. Isn't what's-his-name Holm the news editor?"
"Yes, but he's an idiot."
"You got that right."
"Do you know him?"
"I certainly do. I worked for him for 3 months as a temp in the mid-80s. He's a prick who plays people off against each other. Besides..."
"Besides what?"
"It's nothing."
"Tell me."
"Some girl, Ulla something, who was also a temp, claimed that he sexually harassed her. I don't know how much was true, but the union did nothing about it and her contract wasn't extended."
Berger looked at the clock and sighed. She got up from the bed and made for the shower. Blomqvist did not move when she came out, dried herself and dressed.
"I think I'll doze for a while," he said.
She kissed his cheek and waved as she left. Figueroa parked 7 cars behind Mortensen's Volvo on Lundmakergaten, close to the corner of Olaf Palme's gate. She watched as Mortensen walked to the machine to pay his parking fee. He then walked onto Sveavägen. Figueroa decided not to pay for a ticket. She would lose him if she went to the machine and back, so she followed him. He turned left onto Kungsgatan and went into Kungstornet. She waited 3 minutes before she followed him into the café. He was on the ground floor talking to a blonde man who looked to be in very good shape. A policeman, she thought. She recognized him as the other man Malm had photographed outside the Copacabana on May Day. She bought herself a coffee and sat at the opposite end of the café and opened her Dagens Nyheter. Mortensen and his companion were talking in low voices. She took out her mobile and pretended to make a call, although neither of the men was paying her any attention. She took a photograph with a mobile that she knew would be only 72 dpi. Low quality, but it could be used as evidence that the meeting had taken place. After about 15 minutes, the blonde man stood up and left the café. Figueroa cursed. Why had she not stayed outside? She would have recognized him when he came out. She wanted to leap up and follow him. But Mortensen was still there, calmly nursing his coffee. She did not want to draw attention to herself by leaving so soon after his unidentified companion. And then Mortensen went to the toilet. As soon as he closed the door, Figueroa was on her feet and back out on Kungsgarten. She looked up and down the block, but the blonde man was gone. She took a chance and hurried to the corner of Sveavägen. She could not see him anywhere, so she went down to the Tunnelbana concourse, but it was hopeless. She turned back towards Kungstornet, feeling stressed. Mortensen had left, too.